Oh, yeah. We have much to discuss here with this Jimmy Butler trade. But I want to remind you first that Navy Federal has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Receive a lifetime of membership benefits to help you and your family accomplish your life missions, like a full suite of financial products designed to fit your needs, 24/7 live support, and access to over 300 branches on or near military bases. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information. Call 1-888-842-6328 or download the Navy Federal Credit Union app. Message and data rates may apply. Our long national nightmare is over. Jimmy Butler traded to the destination that probably was discussed third among those where he might be sent, outside of Miami and Houston, but talks had clearly fizzled in that direction. And so Tom Thibodeau decided finally to pull the trigger. And it seems like the impetus was that they weren't winning with Butler, right? I mean, that's what we said, Danny, was like, well, what's going to get him out of there? The fact that this idea that they were going to still win with Butler and Tibbs was going to save his job with Butler was proved a fallacy. And I think at 4-9 after a loss to the Kings last night, they had reached that point.
4-9, a 0-5 road trip is rough. I mean, that's a lot to take. And yeah, they were road games. They lost to Sacramento on Friday night. I think a good place to start with this and any trades, what we usually do, is with the terms themselves. So the deal is Jimmy Butler and Justin Patton, who just had his option declined, so he will be an unrestricted free agent in the summer of 2019, for Robert Covington, Dario Saric, Jared Bayless, and a 2022 second round pick per Real GM. Philly has the better of theirs in Denver, so that's probably not going to be a great pick, but it is something. And of note in that, both teams create trade exceptions in the deal because of how it was structured. Minnesota gets one for $2.7 million. Philly gets one for about $2.5 million.
Yeah, and Minnesota reducing their luxury tax, not bill because they weren't in the tax, but breathing room by a little bit. Philly was so far away from the tax this year, it didn't really matter. They had like $20 million in room. Philly still has their room exception as well to try and sign someone. I think we should start from Philly's end here. While we're sticking with the financials, obviously there's so much to talk about with how this is going to look on the floor. This actually doesn't hurt Philly's financial situation as much as you might think, right? Because the salary was pretty even going out. Butler, he does have a big cap hold next year, $30.7 million. He's making 20 this year, so increase that by 1.5. That's how you get his cap hold for next year. But it is short of the max that he could be making, which is projected for 32.7 right now. So they get a little bit of extra room there once they give him what sounds like a likely max extension, depending on how things go. But this was done with the intention of keeping him. So, but then you're subtracting Saric and you're subtracting Covington, so that opens up a little more space. Remember, they were pretty much right at about $37 million for next year to fit someone in potentially who was the 10 plus year max, but you know, they weren't really being talked about in that way as a destination. I think that was one of the impetus for this trade. But they still have $19.6 million depending on what the draft pick situation looks like next year. Of course, they could still get the number one overall pick, although that's very unlikely with that Sacramento pick that they traded 29-30ths of to Boston. So, and then they even have some salary that we could talk about in a little bit. It's probably not the lead here, but there are ways they could maybe even get up to, you know, close to $30 million in cap space to add around the big three now of Embiid, Butler, and Simmons. Anything else to add on the financials? Do you want to talk about how this is going to work for Philly on the court?
Briefly on the financials, the other massive consideration for that 19 to 20 million, which could expand with other trades with cap space, is that that money, if they sign somebody to a multi-year deal, will make this team very expensive in time, because Jimmy Butler, you know, he's going to get paid. Joel Embiid is already making about $30 million a year. He's already on that contract. And then Ben Simmons will get his raise in 2020. So if they chose to go in that aggressive tact of paying somebody, let's say, $20 million a year for 4 years, let's say that's where they went, well, that team's gonna get, that's probably 3 years in the luxury tax. I mean, unless they make other moves at some point after that to clear money. I'm not saying whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not saying whether ownership is willing to do that, but it is a consideration, and that is why ownership for Philly has a big decision to make in the summer of 2019, because they need to be looking in the crystal ball for the next 4 years and saying, what are we comfortable paying? Because if you either lie to yourselves or make the wrong decision, it meaningfully impacts where the team is.
Yeah, and Butler would be eligible for up to 5 years, $190 million, which would have him making over $43 million in the fifth year of that deal, well into his mid-30s. But let's talk about how this is going to look right now. I mean, this is really, really interesting. You know, they've added Butler, but they've taken away their second best shooter. And we talked about how this team desperately needs shooting. The one thing that Butler is not as good at as Robert Covington is bombing from deep as a spot up shooter. I think Butler can get better in that area, and maybe we will see that from him. But, you know, that's not what he likes to do. He likes to ISO. He likes to handle and pick and roll. And Philly desperately needed that as well, right? I mean, it's kind of interesting when you have a team with all these non-shooters to also need creation, which Butler provides. And certainly, Butler's the best guy available on the market for that. Hopefully, with that room exception on the buyout market, or maybe with additional trades, they can fill in some more shooting around these guys. They still have Redick as well. It's going to be very hard again. Like, Brett Brown is going to really have his work cut out for now, finding an offense where you can give enough space to Butler, enough space to Embiid. I mean, presumably Embiid's going to be setting a screen role for Butler. And then what the hell do you do with Simmons in those sets, having him be off the ball? So there's a lot to look at here in terms of how this offense is going to function, despite being, you know, clearly one of the most talented teams in the NBA now.
This will be a massive whole sum of the parts question. And like last year, Jimmy Butler shot 39% on his catch and shoot threes, but he only attempted two of them a game compared to 1.5 pull-up threes. And our team's going to respect him. How much are they going to stay off him? And as you said, you can't, there aren't going to be that many actions that involve all three of them. It's hard to pull that off. And so what happens with the way the team defends the third guy? And like, this might not be as much of a regular season problem, because most of the time opponents don't have game plans to, I mean, other than basic stuff of leave this guy open or something like that. But in the playoffs, they sure do. And you get Jimmy Butler to compete in the playoffs. You don't get him to win a couple of extra regular season games. And so this, you talked about how this makes life for Brett Brown a lot harder, and I fully agree with you. It also makes life on Elton Brand / Brett Brown, depending on how people see that dynamic, a lot harder too, because now they're looking for shooting, but they're also ideally looking for shooting that is not, you know, tiny, that can be a part of what could be a really dynamic defense.
Yeah, and they do get better defensively here. Jimmy Butler has quicker feet than Robert Covington. He may actually not be quite as good. I mean, Covington is maybe one of the best in the NBA from the wing position at digging down from the wing and getting his hands in on drivers and post players. But Butler still is very solid as a help defender as well. And he's got the strength. I mean, they're between Simmons and Butler. I mean, because Covington really struggled to guard one-on-one in last year's playoffs in particular, but now between Simmons and Butler, I mean, there's no team, especially because the Sixers, you know, I don't see them doing a ton of switching with Embiid on the floor, though, you know, and they're probably gonna, you know, need to play Redick even more now and Shamet. You know, those guys are not gonna be as good as switchers. They could have some lineups that would be pretty good switching, but, you know, because they could throw Wilson Chandler in there as well. But I think whoever the two best threats are on the other team, you just throw Simmons and Butler on them and you're looking pretty darn good there. And then you've got Embiid backing them up. I mean, that's going to be nearly impenetrable, you would think. And, you know, I think if they have good communication, they might switch some too, and then be able to just, you know, talk Redick or Shamet out of those matchups as well if they need to. Wilson Chandler now, though, Dane, becomes a key piece for this team as he returns from his hamstring injury.
Well, yeah, this is something Kevin Pelton noted in his breakdown. The Sixers right now, because they have 14 guys on roster after the trade, two of those guys, Patton and Zaire Smith, are hurt. Then Korkmaz is out of the rotation. Jonah Bolden isn't really playing. So they really have 10 possible guys, depending on who's healthy and who's not. And they traded two starters for one starter. So that opens up, certainly Redick's going to get some of those minutes, but he's not going to get many more. So that opens up something for probably Wilson Chandler, maybe a little bit more for Shamet. And that's a challenge. I mean, Wilson Chandler is still on a minutes restriction, and that does put some heat on buyout guys. They could use that trade exception they created to get somebody, though not obviously somebody who makes a ton of money. And also the idea of potentially moving some of the pieces that they have in something else. That could be, you know, Mike Muscala to me isn't as, I mean, certainly you have a need for him right now, but I think
they need him at backup center.
You have a need for him right now.
Like, I mean, because now, like, I mean, their bench really just doesn't work at all anymore now. I mean, like, McConnell and Fultz, you know, McConnell is a good player, but he was already out of the rotation. Fultz, you know, they were already struggling to get enough spacing for Fultz with Covington out out there. Now that's going to compact even more with Butler, and Fultz will gum up the works even more when Butler is trying to play. And certainly you can't play Fultz, Simmons, and Butler together and expect to do well. You know, maybe you could do that if you're going to just play Muscala at center, you know, and with Embiid out of the game, maybe you could find a way to go there. But so now, I mean, McConnell and Fultz are kind of, you know, almost unplayable themselves. So like you got like six players on this team that really like fit together and can work. And then, you know, they're the inevitable injury concerns as well.
Presumably this will also mean a meaningful reduction in Jimmy Butler's minutes, maybe a reduction to the reported agreement of 32 minutes a game, something that Butler only did twice this season. I think both games were blowouts. He played 41 last night against Sacramento, and that led to some colorful quotes to Sam Amick of The Athletic. And
Yeah, he said, "We have 41 minutes is too much. We have 14 other fucking guys on the roster."
And honestly, we could just refer to those guys as the other fucking guys. That is, it honestly, based on Jimmy's approach and everything else.
No, he loves those guys, and he's been out there fighting for those guys.
He has been fighting for those guys. So, yeah, I mean, from Philly's perspective, I want to do one big picture thing quickly, because you talked about it a little bit at the front, but I think this is important. They, not only did they walk out of last offseason with nothing long term, I mean, obviously, J.J. Redick is a really good consolation prize for what this team needed. But one way of thinking about this trade is that last year they did that. This year, there are a lot of guys in 2019 that would have made a ton of sense for the Sixers. Kawhi Leonard would be awesome there. Klay Thompson is almost perfect. And Durant would have been nasty, obviously, just like he is almost everywhere. But there's a very, and I think Butler is a meaningfully worse fit than all of those guys. But there is a really significant chance that they were going to walk away with none of them. And if they believe, which is an interesting argument, if they believed that Jimmy Butler was not going to go there if they didn't trade for him, well, then they kind of, they raised their floor, even if they arguably lowered their ceiling. And I mean, I would have rather seen Jimmy Butler play with Sharich Covington or both. I mean, you have to manage the minutes to keep those guys happy, but they have 20 million to theoretically work with, or they have Redick and the room mid-level, the non-taxpayer mid-level if they wanted to go that route, whatever. And I understand that rationale because, I mean, Klay seems pretty locked in with the Warriors. Durant and Philly never really seemed like a fit. So then you're putting a lot on the Kawhi train, and I don't know that I would do that. I don't have the intel. I haven't talked to Kawhi and his uncle or anything else, but that's a lot of eggs to be putting in that basket. And it seems pretty clear based on the structure of this that the possibility or certainty of a fifth year was important to Butler, because that's what really had to be the impetus for working as hard to get a trade during the season. Otherwise, you could just sign with somebody else.
And piggybacking on what you were saying there, you might say, oh man, like this isn't the greatest deal, like, you know, because we are now, it's nearly fait accompli that we're going to have to pay Butler this 5-year, $190 million contract, and that's going to be a bad contract. That's probably true. By the end, it's not going to look good. Almost certainly. But let's say they struck out on Klay Thompson and Kawhi Leonard, you know, Chris Middleton probably as well. So now you have to use that cap space. As you mentioned, you know, Ben Simmons would start getting expensive the summer after. So your cap space goes away. So now you're comparing giving Jimmy Butler that 5-year deal, which is a big deal, you know, and it's going to go a little bit longer. But would you rather give Jimmy Butler that 5-year deal and overpay him for a guy who's going to be if not a superstar, a star level of player, at least at the beginning of the contract? Or would you rather overpay for, you know, guys along the level of some of these bad contracts that we saw in 2016, or, you know, an Otto Porter level of guy or something like that? You know, there's a lot of space around the league. And so it's unlikely that whomever they signed that wasn't a star, and I agree with you, I think it's the tea leaves looked pretty unlikely that a star was coming. And, you know, I'm sure some of the intel they had maybe confirmed that. So it's probable to me that Butler's contract, even if it does end up being a bad contract, ends up being better than any other long-term contract that they might have given out next summer.
That's a really good point. And you talked about the timeline here. I think that's a good thing to mention as well. If Butler gets a 5-year deal, that will extend his deal 1 year beyond Joel Embiid. And something I talked about in my piece for The Athletic is that if Butler makes some concessions off of a full max 5-year deal, and remember, he's not eligible for a designated veteran thing because of the first trade, not the second trade. And that could, how they do that will be really fascinating, because they could either cut the per season amounts or something like that, or they could do some sort of non-full guarantee on that final season. And that could be clarifying for what the Sixers are thinking and everything else. So we're still a long way out from that. And it is technically possible for either side to just walk away from this in July of 2019 and just say, you know, maybe if Kawhi says, yes, you could theoretically just say, hit the road, Jimmy, we're going to take Kawhi instead. Or Jimmy could say, I want to play for the Lakers or something else. Like, those things are possible. I don't think anybody expects that now. This is kind of like the Chris Paul Rockets situation redux, where you technically you can't agree to a deal, but everybody kind of thinks that something's going to get done. And yeah, I mean, the Sixers team is absolutely fascinating. And now you have a brand new general manager and a coach who probably has a significant voice in the process, trying to figure out how to do everything else that this team needs. And Philly, you know, they not only do they have intriguing young talent, but they also have draft resources. They have all their own picks. They have the fringe chance of getting Sacramento's. They have that Miami unprotected pick in, I believe that's 2021. And they have a bunch of extra seconds.
It's 2022. 2021. You're right. I apologize. 2021. Yeah, 2022 and is then the good draft. So, okay.
Is the good draft. And so they have a bunch of extra seconds from various things. And so how do they handle this? Do they want to try to get guys in now? Do they get guys in now that have longer term contracts? Do they wait and just say, hey, let's see what we can do with that 20 maybe plus million in next summer? This is now a really, really hard general managing job, but it has stakes, and that's what you get into it for. Like, I'm excited to see where they go with this.
This is a good trade for Philly, Minnesota. I mean, let's just evaluate it just kind of on the asset for asset basis, and then maybe we can transition into the Wolves after that. Actually, you know what? We'll give you the answer to that right after this. So, you know, we're all about the stats here on Dunked On, but this is a rather sobering one. 66% of men start losing their hair by age 35. I was actually one of them back when I was in my mid-20s. Started losing my hair, and after about a year of it, I was like, hey, you know what, I'm going to start taking finasteride, because that works best to keep the hair that you have, so it's best to get it early. And now that's never been easier. You don't have to go to the doctor's office anymore, thanks to Hims, which is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. They connect you with real doctors and medical grade solutions to treat hair loss. These are well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair, not snake oil pills, gas station counter supplements. Surprised they went with gas station counter. The gas station bathroom supplements are even worse, but it's not that. All you have to do here to get real medical solutions for hair loss, go to forhims.com, answer a few quick questions, and a doctor will review and can prescribe you. Then products are shipped directly to your door. No more waiting rooms. No more awkward doctor visits. My listeners can get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today while supplies last. See their website for full details. This would cost you so much more in both money and time if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Instead, go to forhims.com/capspace. Easy to remember. We talk about capspace here all the time on the program. That's forhims, forhims.com/capspace. Forhims.com/capspace. I don't know if that's /capspace URL. That you came from us. Okay, so before the break, I asked you, is this a good trade? Let's just start for Philly side. And it's not impossible, of course, that both sides could have made a good trade here, but just for Philly.
It's also possible that both sides didn't. But so I'm really ambivalent about this for the Sixers. I mean, defensively, it's going to be awesome, but I think the Sixers could have a good defense either way. I'm not really concerned about that. This is the type of deal that makes a team easier for the best squads to defend. And I'm not sure that what they can add around Butler, Simmons, and Embiid to fix that. Like, so when we did the time to panic with Ethan, my biggest concern with them was the incongruity of their three most high profile players. And now theoretically you're replacing Markelle Fultz with Jimmy Butler, but a lot of those concerns still exist because Jimmy Butler's not going to change the way he plays. Ben Simmons isn't going to change the way he plays. Joel Embiid probably isn't going to change the way he plays. So I could be wrong that the sum is just greater than I expect it to be. But I think each of these guys takes a little bit away from the others on the offensive end. And you can still build a really good team. But if we're talking like a championship, that gets chuff.
Well, so you're saying you wouldn't have done this, right? Let's talk about Covington real quickly. I mean, he to me is like the big jewel here. And that's because he was only making $10 million for the next 3 years. He turns 28 in December. And the 3 years after this one, he's going to be making around $10 million. Remember, they did that debt renegotiation and extension that front-loaded his new contract. So they're able to get him for really cheaply. And, you know, he's worth more than that, certainly. You know, he did have a terrible playoffs last year, but he's been better again this year. I mean, he's a guy who's an aggressive shooter. You got to guard him out there, and he's a outstanding defender off the ball and a solid one on the ball, you know. But I think it is worthwhile to note that he did kind of fail in the playoffs last year. Both, you know, the shooting, I think, is something that could have come around, but he was, you know, they were taking him out of the rotation for TJ McConnell. And then really defensively, he was not good enough as their one-on-one stopper on the wing. So I think, like, I like this trade for Philly because they weren't going anywhere with what they had. I mean, Covington, a good player, value contract, you know, as a second banana wing defender, I think you can feel pretty good about it. And maybe, you know, Simmons could have been the first banana, but, I think he's a solid player, but, you know, probably one who was in a little bit too big of a role. Again, when we're talking about this rarefied air of competing for a championship, and Butler is like an A1 type wing defender. And you just get more talent on the team, and you can't probably find a Robert Covington. You know, you could maybe find a player as good as Covington with your $20 million in cap space next year. Or maybe you could find him in a trade. And then the loss of Šarić to me doesn't really matter at all. You know, I think he's like, all right, he could have played a few minutes off the bench at the highest level in the playoffs. But just too bad defensively. And, you know, he's got some ability to get into the post, and his shooting has gotten better, although it waxes and wanes, and he's a good interior passer. But, you know, he just has too many weaknesses to really play big minutes at the highest level in a conference finals or a final situation in today's NBA. So I don't really think it's that. I mean, he was worth something. So there's an opportunity cost, obviously, to dealing him. But, you know, I'm not like, oh man, like they just gave up this great path that they had with Dario Šarić in the starting lineup. So I think talent for talent, they did pretty well here. Sorry, cats are chasing each other. It was a little distracting.
Well,
but anything
and
that
like
argument?
And like you, yeah. Well, and like you, I think that the opportunity cost of losing a small amount of cap space is not as big of a deal as some might think. You know, they are losing some in this, but not a ton. Šarić, yeah, I mean, you could argue that his biggest value was a mix in, like as a supplement to a deal for a different player. But I don't know who that different player was. Like, I'm not sitting there going, oh, Philly should have signed. Incidentally, Josh Richardson would have been a really interesting player for Philly to add. Not saying he's necessarily better than Jimmy Butler, but he is on a more team-friendly contract than Butler is getting. But that's just off the top of my head. I'm just thinking of different guys. So from Philly's perspective, yeah, I mean, they'll have to find replacements, but the margin between the guys they lost and those replacements is less material than the margin between Butler and them, because you can't find Jimmy Butlers very often. And Šarić, I mean, he had a wonderful season last year, but if that was not representative, especially from a shooting perspective, of what he is, any steps back there make him so much less playable against the best teams. And he was, even then, it was getting a little bit dicey. So I think that's a fair point. And I think that's a good transition into Minnesota.
Well, hold on. I got a little more I want to say in Philly first.
Sure, go ahead.
I think they certainly increased their ceiling with this move. I think that Ben Simmons, you know, the idea of him like getting a jump shot, significantly changing his game, didn't look that likely to be. Markelle Fultz was supposed to be the upside for this team. If that was going to happen, it's years from now to where he actually is going to help you win at a championship level. So for the foreseeable future, even with Joel Embiid playing at a level, I think, beyond any of us expected so far this year. I mean, he's been great. But even then, you know, they didn't look awesome. They had a nice win against the Pacers the other night, but it seemed clear to me, you know, I've said this many times, and that they're at a point where, okay, you know, you can win 50 games, you look great against two-thirds of the league, and then they just don't match up well against, you know, the best teams in the NBA, your Torontos, your Bostons, in the East in particular. But so now the challenge becomes, how do you build around this core of Butler, Embiid, and Simmons? We mentioned that the fit between those three is not ideal. It's a lot of talent. It's ideal defensively, that's for sure. And so they have to obviously get some shooting, and hopefully someone with a little size who can have that shooting. They've got JJ Redick right now. You know, if he comes back, he'll probably eat into some of the cap space that they would hope to use next summer. You know, who knows how he ends things, whether he wants to this year, whether he wants to stay there, what his value is on the market, etc. But really, to me, and they still have that 2021 Miami pick as well. To me, the time to go all in is very soon here. And Markelle Fultz is going to be making almost $10 million next year. He is almost certainly not going to give them $10 million of production next year. He is not going to have the ball in his hands. He's not going to get babied anymore now that they have Jimmy Butler on this team. And so his value is only going to go down now. He's not, probably not going to look very good when he's out there. We're not going to see things like Brett Brown going to a lineup with all other shooters on the floor and no Embiid just to try to help Fultz and Simmons coexist. You know, the babying is over for Markelle Fultz with this move. And so to me, they need to trade him post-haste. If he has any value at all, it's only going to go down from here on out. And if, especially if they can either get a guy who, you know, Fitz is on a long-term contract with them who can be another starter, or just gets back someone who's an expiring contract so they can use that space next summer and can help them this year as well. It depends. Who knows what Fultz's value is around the league? There's got to be teams out there who are still interested, but, you know, I probably wouldn't be as a GM at this point, you know, unless I'm a really bad team that just wants to try and get some talent. They also have that all of their picks going forward. They have that 2021 pick. I think the time is, and also you got to hope that it goes well here with Butler so that he'll want to stay. You know, I mean, I think if it's a disaster, if they get swept in the second round, you know, is Jimmy going to want to come back? You know, I'm sure they said all the right things, but basically their agreement was, all right, you know, if things go well, we'll bring you back. We'll make you this contract offer. So there's no guarantee things go well. I think between now and the trade deadline, they need to move Fultz. I think they probably, you know, might even want to throw in a future pick, hopefully find another long-term starter because there aren't that many of those guys around who can defend and shoot the ball and don't necessarily need the ball. Maybe a stretch big obviously would be someone who would help a lot as well, you know, but that might be more of a regular season type of player, like a Ryan Anderson in the buyout market or something like that. They just have to move Fultz. I think they need to move him now because his value is only going to go down. You know, December 15th is when all the guys who signed, not all, but most of the guys who signed last summer, it can be traded. And especially because they're going to be in a battle for seeding as well. It's just like, now that if Butler is going to be a main part of this team, like unless Fultz, like he can't just be, oh, he's pretty dynamic and his jumper is passable. No, he's got to be like a really good jump shooter again. He's so far away from being that. Got to trade him almost immediately, I think.
And they might not even need a true backup point guard ball handler type, depending on how they're going to structure and not Embiid as much, but Butler and Simmons's minutes. I mean, if you, those guys like having the ball in their hands a lot, you could go for more of a complimentary off guard type guy and it would work reasonably well. Also, if they need that ball handler, the margin between Fultz and McConnell isn't as important. And now you think about that $9 million or $10 million in cap space for next year, that becomes really important too. So, and if what you need is a backup point guard, you don't need to pay $9 million for that guy, especially if he doesn't fit particularly well with where you're going. So like, and there's a parallel for me. Obviously, Fultz is a more intriguing talent than those guys were at the time, with what happened with Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor, which was the Sixers, it sounds like, weren't happy with the offers they were getting, so they held on to those guys until the offers they were getting basically went to zero. And at certain points, you just have to grin and bear it and say, this is the best we're going to do. And I'm not saying that's necessarily in the next month, but it is before the February trade deadline. Because as you said, it's not going that way. And yes, there are a bunch of teams that are going to have cap space next summer. And I think that if unless the season goes horribly, somebody might just roll the dice on that. But again, that's not getting value back. That's unloading him for nothing. So I don't know what offers are on the table, but I agree with you that they should be pushing incredibly hard, especially when you consider the present value that they need to convince Butler and that this year is a year that they are competitive.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what that trade is. I haven't had time to look into that yet. We're recording this an hour after the trade came down the pipe here, but that's something that we will probably think about a lot in the future. Okay, much more to get to, but first, this from Trip Actions, which takes the pain out of corporate travel management, the complete solution that helps businesses save and keeps employees happy. I wonder if all of these NBA teams could benefit from Trip Actions to fly all these players around after the trade. Trip Actions is the first travel management platform designed from the ground up with the Road Warrior in mind. So I guess this was not designed for the Minnesota Timberwolves with Jimmy Butler, since they just went 0-5 on that road trip. But it's designed for everyone else with easy booking from app or desktop, 24/7 proactive around the globe support, and incentives for employees to save on travel expenses. Companies large and small see over 90% adoption and up to 34% savings on travel when they use TripActions. Lyft, Sarah Lee's Frozen Bakery, they trust TripActions with their business travel. Learn how TripActions can replace business travel at your company today, and you'll be rewarded just for checking them out. If you go to tripactions.com/capspace, /capspace, talk about it all the time on the program here, attend a 30-minute demo, and you get a $100 Amazon gift card. That's pretty good, $100 for 30 minutes. But hurry, this offer is valid during this month only. That's tripactions.com/capspace for a free demo and a $100 Amazon gift card. tripactions.com/capspace. So what was your final verdict? Did you think this is a good trade for Philly? I think it's a good trade. It's not a no-brainer, but I think it's a good trade and a necessary trade.
I think it's a worthy gamble. Yeah. So yeah, I don't love it, but it I mean, at a certain point you have to do something, and you're comparing this to a lot of imperfect options because that's just where this team is. And so yeah, I mean, would it be better to have Klay Thompson? Sure. Were they going to get Klay Thompson? No. So that's sort of a, yeah. That's kind of where I ended up with it. And it's always hard because you never know what other offers are on the table. And so if another team was undervaluing their asset or something like that, then maybe it gets that way. But in the abstract, yeah, I think they did a pretty good job. And
well, and I'll say this too, you know, Philly, this was a unique opportunity for them because they had good players. Usually a team trading someone like Butler is like, you know, sane about it and wants future assets. But right. Minnesota was not sane about it. And so this was one that Philly actually could get into with the players that they had, whereas it probably wouldn't have been as attractive for another team that was interested in making a trade. So yeah, I think that, and we say, hey, you know, yeah, Philly, like, they're just young, you know, Simmons and Embiid, like, these guys are, you know, still in their early 20s, and, you know, we think of them as having all these assets, but as Bodner has detailed, they really didn't have that many assets left anymore, and so they had a lot fewer options going forward as a way to get to being a top level team. And that's really what this is about, right? I mean, they could win 50 games the next 4 years with Simmons and Embiid and lose in the second round every year, but that's not what this team should be trying for. And so as far as just getting more this level of talent on the team, getting better, potentially getting into championship contention, and we'll see how good this actually makes them. You know, I think they could be right there with Toronto and Boston if they can get some more guys around Butler, Simmons, and Embiid. As of right now, I don't think they're there still. But, you know, like the status quo seemed like, oh yeah, you know, they're a young team, they're just developing, there's no rush. Like, no, actually they're kind of was, because their cap space was about to go away and they just didn't really have many other options for taking the next step, especially when it looked like, you know, Fultz and Simmons jumpers just were never going to develop.
Right. And while Simmons can become a much better player, a much better player with his same flaw isn't like it's still valuable, but it's not as valuable. I don't know how to necessarily convey this, but there's a ceiling on what he can do if the jump shot never comes. That ceiling is still really high. It's an all NBA player, but it's not the when we're talking about the playoffs and a potential championship team, it's something a little bit different. And so I'm happy that they didn't bet on that reform because it probably wasn't coming. Are you ready for the transition? Because I have a way to frame this that I think you might find interesting.
Absolutely.
Okay. Would you rather have Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the upgrade from the 16th pick to the number 7 pick, or Robert Covington, Dario Saric, that second round pick, I guess, if that matters, and let's even exclude for the sake of this 1 year of Jimmy Butler. Which of those would you rather have?
Well, I don't think you can exclude 1 year of Jimmy Butler. Like, they made the playoffs last year.
What I'm saying is I would still take Covington and Saric in the pick, even without the year of Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about that, especially because, you
know, well, and LaVine's playing a lot better, so that yeah. that is a consideration here. Yeah. Though he did get paid a bunch of money,
and Markkanen would have been like a really good fit with what they were trying to do too. I mean, I think it's probably would have had that package, but they also did get a year of Butler, so you know,
and they made the playoffs and all of those sorts of things. Yeah. So that was one frame I wanted to do, but then the other part is this Wolves team that is now created is so bizarre because they have all these players that I think makes sense on a good team, but I'm not sure they have the structure on the players on top of them to do it. I mean, I know that's the idea behind Towns and Wiggins. Also, I'm not sure Thibodeau is the right coach to maximize a team around this conceit, but this is the second time in the last few months that a star pending free agent at a position of value has been traded without that team receiving what I would consider a premium asset. And in both circumstances, the front offices in play went for more of a immediate contribution scheme, though these guys are younger than, you know, than DeRozan overall. And I think in both cases, even if the offers were weaker than expected in terms of more long-term stuff, that it's just they created something that's a little bit bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, let's just take a look at, since we were talking about it, actually, I mean, do you want to just say, like, do you think this is a good trade for the Wolves at this point?
I don't love it for them. I really don't, because Šarić and Covington are exactly the type of players that, like, because you could say, oh, they could repackage these guys or they could do something else, that are more additives to make a trade more interesting than centerpieces of really getting value back. The guy I was thinking about with this was like Danny Green. While they have way better contracts long term than Danny Green, he made that trade. Oh, I like these guys when they get traded a lot more for the acquiring team than the team that is getting something back usually, because they're just undervalued around the league. And so I love Robert Covington. I don't think other teams do. And so as much as I do, and the Wolves are getting the benefit of not having to give him the balloon payment. His contract is very reasonable. And so maybe they have him around. I think he helps make their team better. But what value is him making their team better providing to Minnesota in a loaded Western Conference? I mean, it makes it more likely that they can fight towards the 8 seed. Sure, absolutely. And Šarić is kind of the same type of guy. But I don't know really if what they're bringing is that valuable. And as time progresses, those contracts get less valuable just because you get less team-friendly years on it. You know, each year that passes, you get charges making basically nothing for this year and next. So I don't love this deal for Minnesota, because I think 2 or 3 years from now, we'll be walking away from being like, well, okay, that's what they got for Jimmy Butler.
I mean, I think this deal could kind of get them back into, like, you know, lower end playoff contention. If they, you know, I think Covington can be not as good as Butler defensively, but pretty good. And I think he actually helps the offensive fit a lot more. You know, we'll see whether Šarić is going to start at the four over Taj Gibson or not. They also already have Tolliver, who's kind of, you know, does similar things. I mean, Šarić will be even more wasted in terms of, like, his kind of supplementary playmaking and post up ability on switches than he would have been. But, you know, Gibson is not under contract. Oliver's old, so Šarić could be the power forward of the future here, and I think he is a solid fit offensively with Towns. You know, Towns had 39 last night. Hopefully he will get back to playing well again offensively. Wiggins, who actually now missed time again with that quad injury, which, you know, is starting to sound like it could be one of these chronic quad injuries, the way we've seen from guys like Seldon and obviously Kawhi. Hopefully that's not the case. But, you know, I mean, now the pressure is back on Andrew Wiggins to evolve into being a very good player again, which, you know, seems unlikely these days. But that was always going to be the case, that they're very reliant on him becoming good. So, I think this is fine for them. I think they can kind of hang around. They're 4-9 already this year, so making the playoffs just because you're coming from that 5-win deficit is looking a lot less likely. But, you know, these guys are actually under contract for a while. We'll see what Šarić ends up potentially getting extended for. We'll see whether Tibbs is still around next year. But this is, I mean, at least they have 4 starters under contract here for a while going forward, and all guys who've played at a solid level. So, you know, it's not terrible. I mean, this is probably once the Josh Richardson goal or trade became unrealistic because he started playing so well this year. I mean, they probably are going to rue not taking that deal that involved Richardson and a first round pick from Miami. And, you know, they would have probably had some negative consequences in terms of having to take on salary there too. But, you know, I think that they're going to be unhappy that they didn't take that, because Richardson's looking like he's taken the next step for sure offensively. And he's fabulous defensively. He's probably better than Covington is. But, you know, this is okay. It's probably better than the 4 first round picks from Houston, because those are probably going to be pretty heavily protected. And then, you know, having to take on Chris and Brandon Knight, his bad contract as well, you know, wasn't really going to look good. And at least this way, they're also, you know, their tax concerns going forward have been alleviated, because this was going to be, they brought back Butler, would be a pretty expensive team. So I think they did fine here. I'm not sure, you know, and at this point, you know, because of the trade offer was made so late at this point, or the trade demand was made so late, I'm not sure that there was really a better offer out there for them. You know, I think this was better than the Houston one, probably. Do you agree with me on that, or do you think that Houston offer would have been better. I mean, granted that we don't know the protections, but assuming they weren't like completely
the protection is entirely it. Like, yeah, if it was four like and the late picks were lightly protected, then I would rather have Houston's offer. Yeah. But if they weren't, then I mean, because you can't get that. But I wonder, like, you know, long term, what Minnesota's really going to get out of this trade. I like both Covington and Charge, but it feels like this is more kind of like where the Clippers are this year, where it's like, oh, you're an interesting team, you're a competitive team, but the Clippers, this is a holding pattern to something else that they hope will be a lot better. Actually, the Clippers are another loser of this deal if it looks like Jimmy Butler is going to sign with Philly, because then that's one guy that can't sign with the Clippers. But they are, they're a fine team, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. I actually might enjoy watching the Wolves now more, but they're going to put a lot of creation on Wiggins' shoulders. Jeff Teague, when he gets back, is going to have a complicated role with this team, and it'll be kind of maybe more traditional in a sense, but that doesn't necessarily make them better. And
well, it's,
you know,
going to make them better than
hole.
The ridiculous team they were with the ridiculous chemistry that they had to start the year, and knowing whether Jimmy Butler was going to play every game, and, you know, this ridiculous media circus. Like, at least that'll be, so they're going to be, it made them better for this year, and I think that was part of why Butler finally, you know, the fact that the Wolves were losing finally forced Tibbs to pull the trigger, because he's like, hey, you know what, if we're 4-9, we could be 4-9, you know, and trade Butler and get something back here. So yeah, I mean, I still, like, I just don't know what a better offer was that was out there. The Clippers weren't willing to put in Tobias Harris, which is a little curious to me that they wouldn't do that, but compared to Jimmy Butler. But if that were the case, you know, I'm just not sure what else there was out there, regardless. And even, you know, when we say, hey, we would rather go for more future assets, like, who was going to trade for Butler this year that was going to give up a lot of future assets, you know, where he would want to, like, like, the only teams that have that at this point, you know, he's not going to go to Boston. So, you know, in terms of, like, good teams that have future assets, there aren't really any of those out there anymore. So, you know, he's not going to go to Phoenix or something, a team that has some future assets that they can give back, because he's just going to leave there. You know, Brooklyn didn't seem interested. The Knicks didn't seem interested in trading for him at this point. You know, those, they don't have huge aspirations this season. So, I mean, I'm not sure what else was left. I mean, I think that what they're really going to rue is just blowing it on the Miami thing.
Yeah, and also potentially not taking, depending on the reporting of the circumstance, the early discussions, like in August or whenever that was, seriously, because there might have been better offers then, you know, if they had reconsidered it. It's basically, it kind of sounds like he said something like, I'm not coming back, and they didn't treat that as a trade demand, because that's not a trade demand, but
yes,
the way you and I would interpret that is a trade demand, because we're not Tom Thibodeau and we're not trying to win as much this year. It just it seems like he treated that more as input rather than a trade demand. And, you know, maybe there would have been more offers there, teams would be less settled in who they have and everything like that. And you're right that Minnesota was put in an unfortunate circumstance in terms of timing by some of the teams that are aspirational about their cap space not being good enough this year where he's providing a lot of value. I floated the idea of Brooklyn. I thought Brooklyn was making a mistake not going as aggressively after Jimmy Butler, not knowing the terms of the deal, just because he's probably better than what they're going to do with their cap space over the next couple of years. So the Knicks are in this weird circumstance where he would, even if they weren't getting much present value from him, he might be better than what they get with their cap space, depending on how they're feeling about KD and everything else. So I think you're going to have a lot of teams that ended up making a mistake here because they're thinking they're going to get something better. And that's what makes the Philly part of this so compelling, is that they made the opposite bet. And yeah, it's fascinating. And so something I wanted to ask you, and this isn't the way necessarily to evaluate this trade from Minnesota standpoint, but do you like, not knowing a lot of things about the Western Conference, do you expect Minnesota to make the playoffs in one of the next 2 years?
I mean, their defense is probably still going to suck. So, you know, a lot of it depends on the development of Wiggins, which I'm not high on. But Karl Towns could be such a good offensive player that, you know, he gets you to being a good offense on your own. So, I mean, you know, I think they'll be right around a 500 team. You know, I'm not a believer in Tibbs as a coach. If he gets fired and they get someone else in there who's a little bit better, at least you can really maximize the offense for this team, because, you know, it seems like really nobody is going to be able to maximize this team's defense at this point. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, they got about a 50-50 shot this year. I mean, if they were just starting this season, like everyone was starting the season, and they had this lineup, they weren't already 4-9, you know, I'd give them an okay shot of making it. So I mean, to do that is still, they're still kind of better off than they were before they made the Butler trade, if they're going to be, you know, a little over 500. So we'll see how it works out. I mean, there is the risk that, you know, Covington and Šarić looked a lot better in Philly than they're going to look in Minnesota, because, you know, Brett Brown's offense really really helped them a lot more than Tom Thibodeau's pretty staid approach. And Covington, you know, he's a pretty solid defender, but, you know, he's not going to be able to do it all on his own. And so, you know, he looked really good in Philly's system, and he had Embiid behind him, he had Simmons around him, you know, as opposed to he's going to just be the only guy playing defense in Minnesota now. So those guys could look a lot worse once they're there.
One thing I want to mention here, there's reporting that the trade call on this isn't going to happen until Monday. If I were advising Thibodeau, I would tell him to try to find partners to move Covington and Sharj right now. I would seriously go after that because there's a serious downside risk to those guys just looking worse. I don't know. But because I'm sure there are people who didn't expect that those players were on the market. And so if you think their value now is better than their value will be a year or two from now, I'd consider it. I'm not saying I would absolutely trade them, but I would listen. I would listen pretty quickly because you can turn them around before the trade call happens without a problem.
I guess. I mean, Covington is about as good of a fit as you could possibly hope for, though, as a 3-and-D type of winger. I mean, that's what they've desperately needed in Minnesota for the last, God knows how long. I mean, they desperately needed one back in the Kevin Garnett years. I don't know if they've ever had one on this team. And Šarić, you know, I'm just not sure his value is that high. You know, I don't know if you could even get a first round pick for him. I think he wants to see how this all works out in terms of the fit. So I don't really know
what I'm saying is there's an opportunity cost to finding out how it works out, because if it works out poorly, then maybe you're walking out of this trade with very, very little.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're getting the good news is like neither of those guys makes that much money. You know, also Jared Bayless is in this trade. There's a thought that he's going to get waived, which wouldn't surprise me. And hey, good job by Philly holding on to him instead of waiving him, because they were able to use him as salary filler. They wouldn't have had anyone else. They would have had to trade somebody good. So that actually worked out that they held on to Bayless. Because we were saying, hey, why hold
on
to him?
And that's kind of the argument I made against the Knicks waiving Noah, is that you never really know what you're going to need in terms of making something happen. And even if they're an imperfect value, he was pretty good filler. And I mean, it would have probably been something like Muscala and Korkmaz. Muscala's going to help them a lot more than Jared Bayless. So
yeah, I guess it would have had to have been Muscala. He would have been the other potential option here. I'm really interested to see how Tibbs uses these guys and to see what kind of spacing they have. And you know, I don't think it's going to, I think they're going to punch kind of below their weight, but this is a pretty talented team still, you know, a team that certainly, you know, has as much talent, especially on offense, as a lot of these other teams in the West. So, you know, I do think there's a possibility they could play well. I'm not a believer that Tibbs is the guy to really maximize what they can do offensively. And I think we've already established that these guys aren't going to stop anybody. And losing Jimmy Butler and adding Šarić and Covington, you know, that's probably a downgrade defensively, although they did defend okay when Butler was on the floor last year, and like they were all actually trying reasonably hard.
Well, the other downgrade is that they might not play Taj Gibson as much, and so
that would
hurt them.
Yeah,
too.
Although I don't know how much Taj really helps I've always felt like Taj should be playing backup center for them.
Yeah, that's true. And there are some cool concepts that they could go with this team. I mean, if they played Towns, Wiggins, Covington, Šarić, and maybe a bigger guy and tried to switch a little bit more, I mean, maybe that would work. I don't think it would, but it's worth trying. And then you could use Taj as a second unit center, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, actually, what I'm scared of is he's going to play Dario at the three and Covington at the two and then still play Taj. Well, with Wiggins out, you know, especially, we'll see where that quad injury goes. All right, I think we're running out of steam here. Anything else you wanted to say on this before we wrap up?
I wrote a CBA-centric piece for The Athletic about this, and I mean, you got my basketball analysis here, so talking about kind of the choices that Philly has to make and where Minnesota's books are and all that kind of stuff, so you can read that at The Athletic or subscribe at theathletic.com/capbase.
All right, thanks for listening. Programming note, this is going to be Sunday night's episode, so we'll be back on Monday night instead to do some of our more usual programming, but we went long enough on this that we wanted to get this out to you guys right away. But don't forget that, like our mission to give you great basketball analysis, Navy Federal has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Receive a lifetime of membership benefits to help you and your family accomplish your life missions, like a full suite of financial products designed to fit your needs, 24/7 live support, and access to over 300 branches on or near military bases. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information. Call 1-888-842-6328 or download the Navy Federal Credit Union app. Message and data rates may apply.